Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Well, while most of America is completely consumed with things like the Kavanaugh hearings, the overall FBI investigation around that, or even things like the presidential text that went out today, which I will touch on today, but maybe not in the way you might think. Much of the most important news around the world and in this country continues to just fly under the radar. Domestic policy continues to get worse as we continue to hemorrhage our constitutional rights for the national security state, the war state, the welfare state. And our foreign policy continues to increase in its militaristic rage around the world, killing civilians, just bombing countries for no reason, it seems, and calling out every other country that's seen as the enemy of the United States for doing the very things the United States is verifiably doing. All of that flying under the radar while we're focused on the wrong things. And literally, as if Saudi Arabia watched my show yesterday and said, let's do exactly what Ryan said we were likely going to do, they did exactly what I said they were going to do. And it shouldn't surprise any of us. But the shocking, the brazenness with them being at the United Nations and willing to do what they just did is astounding to me. But it just goes to show you how little people are actually paying attention. Them knowing that the United States and the Western media will not pay attention to what they did, short of the independent media forcing it into the discussion, which is why it's so very important that we continue to push these topics into the mainstream discussion and reach the people that may not otherwise see this. The first story of the day is a hard one to take in, but it is, again, very important for us to continue to point this stuff out. And it's one that just took place in Yemen, literally while Saudi Arabia was at the United Nations trying to defend the fact that they were not committing war crimes. And it was simply mistakes that they admitted to. As that was happening, as this title says, as Saudis defend against war crimes, the allegations around them, Saudi's airstrike in Yemen kills entire family. While they were doing that. Literally, this is literally what I was saying. And this is not a shock to most watch this show. As we know, Mohammed bin Salman himself has said that he will continue to target children. And clearly, he's continuing to target children. This shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone who actually understands what's going on, who actually reads the news and not just these propaganda outlets that pump you full of nonsense to keep you from paying attention to things like this. The reality of U.S. foreign policy, the reality of the U.S. allies and what they're doing around the world. And it's horrifying to see. So Saudi Arabia, of course, backed by the United States, carried out an airstrike targeting specifically a displaced family in the Mastaba district in the province of Hijaz, southwestern Yemen, early Tuesday morning. A man, his wife, and their 9-year-old daughter were killed in this strike, along with 10 other innocent civilian people. Rescue efforts were complicated by justified fears of additional strikes, as Saudi Arabia regularly uses what they call double-tap strikes in Yemen, carrying out an initial airstrike and then circling back to specifically target rescuers seeking to aid those that were just hit by these airstrikes. Understand that they're striking civilians and then circling back to hit the people that rush in to help the civilians they just murdered. They're easily verifiable. We've talked about this many times in the past. Now, the latest attack comes just hours after Saudi Arabia admitted that its forces had committed what it called certain mistakes in Yemen. After increasing pressure from international bodies, of course, and human rights groups that accuse them of carrying out war crimes in the country that they very clearly are. Saudi Defense Ministry spokesman, as we noted on in the last show, Askeber Atolabai, I believe is how you say his name, told a panel of 18 independent experts on Monday that a coalition investigation had uncovered the existence of certain unintentional mistakes in a number of these operations, adding that the task force recommended that perpetrators should be held to account and victims should enjoy redress. Which is knowing that they were literally, at that same moment, carrying out a strike on a civilian family. Of course, in her response to the Saudi Defense Ministry, the panel's chairwoman, Renate Winter, wondered why schools and hospitals had been targeted repeatedly, said, quote, "You say it's an accident. How many such accidents can you bear, and how many such accidents can people in Yemen bear?" As we pointed out in the last show. Since the war began in 2015, the illegal invasion, more rightly called, the U.S.-backed Saudi-led coalition has repeatedly targeted displaced civilians. As they even flee these war zones, they completely target them, as Hussein al-Bukhadi showed in many of his reports. In the most recent such attack before today, airstrikes targeted displaced families near the port city of Hodeida on August 24th, killing or wounding 31 people, 24 of whom were children. Many of the victims of the strike belonged to a single family, and we covered this when it took place. Of course, knowing that Hodeida, the Al-Baba port, I believe is what how it's pronounced, being the most geostrategic important point to the U.S. coalition for many different reasons. And then simply just targeting the civilians in the area for many different reasons, but clearly committing war crimes, undeniably so, and then just saying, oh, well, we made a few mistakes, while doing the same thing again the very moment they're saying that. Now, this week specifically, one person was killed and a number of others sustained injuries after Saudi fighter jets, this is prior to the recent one we're talking about today, conducted an airstrike on Munira City in Hodeida, western Yemen. Saudi jets also conducted an airstrike on the residential area of Ghafriya in the Dahir district in the northern province of Sadaa, killing a child and wounding several others, civilians. As the reports show, over 600,000 civilians have been killed or injured in Yemen since the Saudi-led coalition began its attacks in 2015. This according to the Yemeni's Ministry of Human Rights based in Sana'a. The U.S.-backed coalition's blockade on Yemen has also triggered an epidemic of disease and famine across the country, as we continue to point out. So this 600,000 people is not including all of the 18 million plus who are essentially about to starve to death, eating leaf paste to survive, and the many others that die due to famine and, or excuse me, due to cholera outbreaks and things that we're talking about. This is just 600,000 people due to their strikes that were mistakes, as they claim. I mean, truly understand them. They're standing there in front of the UN, knowing the US and Israel are directly backing them, saying, we're going to do our best to stop this and investigate while they're targeting a family. These are the people that the United States backs. Truly, these are the people the United States oligarchy are. And it's important that we begin to recognize that. If you have not yet seen it, I highly recommend you check out my recent interview with Hussein al-Bukhadi, an on-the-ground Yemeni journalist, who's covering in the moment what's actually taking place there, risking his life, in fact, to regularly bring you the truth on the ground. And it is, in fact, some pretty horrifying things to see that are going on there. But I highly recommend you check out that interview because it is very important, chock full of some profound information, hard to hear, admittedly, but important nonetheless. As this continues, it's important that we continue to push these things into the mainstream discussion so people see what's really going on. Likely, the vast majority of the mainstream manipulated public has no idea that they just bombed a family and everyone and 10 other civilians with them while pleading their case to the United Nations. That may make a difference. Worth trying. On to some domestic news, a very important story, one that's near and dear to my heart. And of course, this shows you the very clear connection between these institutions, or rather these legal institutions in our country that are supposed to be, you know, protecting Americans and working for your best interest, who work hand in hand with the very companies that are robbing you of your health while telling you they're working for you. A great article, one of two that I'm going to be talking about today from Carrie Wedler. This one entitled, DEA Grants Pharmaceutical Company Monopoly on Medical CBD. Interesting how this is supposedly something, oh, that's just so dangerous for your health. Oh, but wait a minute, a company in our pharma industry made something that's just like that one that we'd see naturally, and that's the one that we're going to make okay. You see what's going on here? Interesting how this stuff always seems to work out. This is a very important story. And again, it's a microcosm of a much larger problem in this country that goes well beyond big pharma. But the hand-in-hand connection between our government and our corporations that has nothing to do with what's in your best interest. So news circulated recently, which I was actually unaware of, that had slipped by, which is important, but also in not correct, as we now find out, that the DEA had rescheduled cannabidiol, CBD, the non-psychoactive ingredient in cannabis, meaning it can't get you high. But the technicalities, however, of the agency's decision actually now show that the ruling is highly restrictive and it's essentially not at all what they're actually doing. So it's actually good that we didn't see it and report on it because it was basically a lie or a deception, ultimately. The decision concerned a recent FDA-approved pharmaceutical version of CBD. Of course, why would we want the natural version that's full, that's perfect the way it is? Of course, we need Big Pharma to recreate it and add what they need to make it slightly less perfect, but something they can patent and sell you. And then, of course, sell you more drugs as the side effects from their flawed version always seem to pop up. Now, this produced by GW Pharmaceuticals. Due to the federal government's continued prohibition of cannabis, which again is absurd, knowing that the vast majority of this country disagree with that in this so-called democracy, Epidiolex, I believe is how it's pronounced, was prohibited, interestingly, from going to market unless the DEA rescheduled CBD. Interesting how that works. So this whole time, people are doing research and showing the medicinal purposes, the way it could be used to solve so many problems. They don't care. Who cares? It's illegal. You're going to jail if you use it. Oh, but the pharmaceutical company creates a version of it. And guess what they do? Without delay, they rush and make sure they can legalize CBD. But wait, not CBD for everyone. So this of course, led some people to believe that since the FDA had approved this specific medication, that they had essentially, then this was actually, so you know, basically pure CBD, but manufactured. And this led them to believe that, of course, maybe all CBD products would also be approved, but they would be mistaken. The DEA decision applies specifically only to the FDA-approved drugs we're talking about, meaning they have only granted GW Pharmaceuticals drug and essentially given them a monopoly on the plant-derived CBD. See how this worked out? They immediately hop to when a pharmaceutical company creates a basically the same thing in a lab. And instead of, and so they allow it to pass, but not all CBD, only the one that they made because they can profit from it. Now the DEA said, quote, "What this does not do is legalize or change the status of CBD oil products," just point blank. "As of right now, any other CBD product other than Epidiolex remains a Schedule I controlled substance." Understand, meaning that by definition means it has no medicinal value and is highly addictive, both of which are factually and verifiably incorrect. But they don't care about that. Only if a big pharma company makes the exact same thing, then they'll legalize it. See how that works? So ultimately, it's still dramatically illegal under federal law, even while most of the country has legalized it. Now, what is getting approved is Epidiolex itself as a drug, not CBD, pursuant to the new drug application that they put in, relating to its medical efficacy and low potential for abuse, they claim, which is exactly the same thing of CBD. You see this inherent contradictory here. Now, marijuana is still, in fact, a Schedule I substance, as all of you know, under federal law. But CBD is not scheduled itself, they claim, but as a substance derived from marijuana, is just lumped in with all of it. Same thing. I mean, it's absurd to see the inherent hypocrisy in all of this. Maybe the same way that the United States government has held a patent on the medical use for cannabis, marijuana, for decades, even while they arrested people for having it as a Schedule I drug, meaning it has no medical value. Very easily verifiable for any of you out there. They have had a patent on the medical use for marijuana for a very long time. I've done entire shows on this. And even still kept it Schedule I and even still arrested people for trying to use it to treat their medical issues. Now, the DEA's decision on Epidiolex simply means a giant corporation enjoys, of course, the perks of government rulemaking. And it will likely be other pharmaceutical companies that reap all the benefits. Even in regard to researching CBD, actually, even just the researching, this applies only to studies conducted on Epidiolex, not CBD in general, just their version of it. This is exactly what I've been saying since the very beginning. that we will see these steps toward these ridiculous one step forward, two step back kind of progression towards legalization as long as they can control it. And this is what they're doing. They're dragging their feet, regardless of what the people want, so that they can control it. And this is what we're seeing. That they can manipulate it, they can patent it, they can charge you, they can tax it, they can do everything they normally can with all the other drugs they have, and God knows what else they're going to do with it. Sure as hell ain't CBD when it's coming from a big pharma lab. That's how I see it. But, as always, come to your own conclusions, but it's very clear, as I point out, the underhanded, behind-the-back connection between the DEA, the FDA, and these government institutions, and the big pharma corporations. Hard to miss it. Moving on to the next story, in regard to foreign policy again, coming from anti-war, about the absurdity of our foreign policy in regard to Syria that's becoming glaringly apparent. This one entitled, U.S. Sending Mixed Signals on Military's Role in Syria. You don't say. I think that's something we can all basically realize now, but this is becoming almost humorously obvious in a way that they don't even know what to say anymore. And it seems like it just doesn't matter, honestly. So U.S. officials are now completely open about their intentions to keep military forces inside of Syria indefinitely, apparently. Despite this, of course, directly contradicting what Trump has said himself many, many times. But this openness about their illegal invasion and occupation policy in Syria is, however, raising questions that Trump administration officials are apparently not ready to answer. One of which is simply, why? Seems like an easy one. State Department Special Envoy James Jeffries says that the goal is enduring defeat of ISIS and, quote, nothing else, saying that, quote, it's not broader than that. And meanwhile, in the macabre comical sitcom that is U.S. foreign policy, according to John Bolton, it's broader than that. Bolton didn't even mention ISIS, saying instead that the U.S. troops in Syria are there to block the movement of Iran and Iranian allies. See, just a complete disconnect between what President Bolton is ultimately saying and what other people are trying to say. And the point is they haven't gotten the memo that we're finally admitting that Iran is while we're there and many other things. It's not just Iran. There's many much deeper narratives and reasons and intentions behind all of this. But very clearly, it's not to fight their proxy army of ISIS, the ones they created, funded, put in place, and used as a justification and a lie to illegally invade Syria. It's to overthrow the government of Syria and actually to stand against Iran and many other things as well, as we've gotten into on this very show. But the absurdity of seeing them toss this ball around, this hot potato, well, no, it's about ISIS. No, it's about Iran. No, it's about Assad. They just don't even know anymore. And again, the point being, it doesn't seem like it even matters anymore. Because some people are just so convinced or lost into other propagandized stories that they're not even paying attention anymore. Until, of course, the next false flag comes around and we'll see who's paying attention. Now, Bolton agreed that U.S. troops are staying in Syria indefinitely, but that they are holding out until Iran withdraws, not only from Iranian troops from Syria or their Iranian troops from Syria, but also, of course, their proxies, which, according to the administration officials, apparently cover some 80% of Assad's forces. So in other words, they're never leaving, is what that really breaks down to. That should be pretty clear to most of you on the show, but hopefully that just made it abundantly more clear. Moving on to the next story, this one coming from commondreams.org, entitled, Rejecting U.S. Claims They Don't Harm Humanitarian Aid, UN Court Orders Easing of Sanctions Iran Calls Illegal and Cruel. Now this is an interesting development to see how this is progressing. For one of many reasons, but most importantly, simply showing that the world is not in line with U.S. agendas, and which is something they want you to think. More than anybody, they want the United States to think. They want us as Americans to believe that the United States is morally correct, and everyone that's anyone stands with what they're trying to accomplish. However, that's not true. And now we're actually seeing a lot of people stand up, including the European Union and the United Nations and the International Criminal Justice and all these different groups coming out and saying, we don't agree with what you're trying to accomplish here, which is interesting. So a preliminary ruling from the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, which Washington is expected to just blatantly ignore, like they have in the past, comes after President Donald Trump in May announced that he was withdrawing from the United States, withdrawing the United States from the Iran nuclear deal and reimposing economic sanctions. Despite, of course, warnings doing so would harm the general international community and Iran specifically, which, of course, when you understand sanctions, is the point. Hurting the Iranian people so to affect the Iranian government, even though they pretend to be fighting for the Iranian people. It's a ridiculous joke. The United Nations highest court on Wednesday ordered the Trump administration to ease sanctions on Iran that are impacting humanitarian aid and aviation safety, ruling that U.S. assurances the economic limitations would not endanger either were not adequate. Of course, they always make the claim that it's for these other reasons, which is just an easy way to include all of the ridiculous claims they make, but that it's actually hurting humanitarian aid. It's hurting the people is what that ultimately boils down to. And as they say, aviation safety. And of course, the U.S. assures them, no, that's not at all what we're doing, and then it does. But that's the point, you see. And now the United Nations and the ICJ are saying, yeah, you need to stop because you're hurting people, is what this boils down to. It says, quote, Iran's strategy of taking the U.S. to the international court has paid off. This according to Trita Parsi, founder of and president of the National Iranian American Council, the NIAC. The U.S., of course, will disregard the ruling, but Iran's aim likely was to establish that it is the U.S., and not Iran, that is the rogue nation now. And like she says, this is what they have accomplished. Clearly, they're the ones in line with the international community, saying that they are the ones hurting people. Now, Iranian Foreign Minister Javad Zarif, in a tweet, called the decision, quote, another failure for sanctions-addicted U.S. government and victory for the rule of law. Echoing Iranian President Hassan Rouhani's remarks to the United Nations last week, Zarif added that it is, quote, imperative for the international community to collectively counter malign U.S. unilateralism. And says, quote, make no mistake, ICJ decision that some U.S. sanctions on Iran are legal are as much a victory for Iran as it is a victory for the U.N., that he, Parsi, concluded. Quote, it shows that international law is behind the UN, the EU, as it seeks to keep the Iran deal alive, and that it is Trump that's violating international law, or rather, the Trump administration, the U.S. oligarchy. And you, Trump threw them, ultimately. But the point, all at the end of the day here, is that this is very clear that the U.S. is on the wrong side of all of this. And I mean, even if you think that they're morally correct, which is kind of hard to understand unless you just buy them at their face value propaganda, that Iran is doing things that are bad around the world that we can't point to and we can't prove, but they're a bad guy. And then just we're supposed to just fall in line and say, yes, that's why we should do this, even though their sanctions are actually hurting the people and not the government. But don't look at that. Do this because Bolton says so. But the reality is the rest of the world is saying we disagree. That has to stand for something. And of course, in an interesting development, this one coming from ZeroHedge.com, entitled, after UN top court rules in favor of Iran, Pompeo terminates decades-old treaty. Of course, because that's what you do, right? When they just disagree, you just tear up the treaty. Who cares? Just whatever. That seems like U.S. foreign policy today. As they continue to attack other people for violating treaties and international law, they continue to violate treaties and international law. But this is the way it is with the U.S. these days. It's complete hypocrisy under a moral standard because we are the U.S. and this doesn't apply to us. As Pompeo has even actually point blank said in these videos within the article you can check out for yourself, that this doesn't apply to the U.S. And Bolton said as much as well in a recent interview from today. He said point blank, that none of these things apply to the U.S.'s ability to do what they think is in their national security interest, which is just this broad way of saying whatever we want to do. Nothing applies to us if we think it violates our national security, which, as I pointed out in the past, is their scapegoat for anything they want to do. So Pompeo said in his State Department press briefing, quote, I'm announcing that the United States is terminating the 1955 Treaty of Amity with Iran. This is a decision that is 39 years overdue, basically saying it's just never, it should have never a good thing. And this is, of course, a treaty of amity, meaning, it's a positive step in the cooperation between Iran and the United States. Now, the decision by the UN and the ICJ, as we've talked about, essentially gives legal cover for countries and companies seeking to still do business with Iran amidst all the threats of punitive action by the U.S. should they actually proceed, which clearly, as we pointed out, the world wants to do. And this does directly affect all of the oil deals, which we'll get to in our next story, which directly affects not just everyone else around the world, but Americans. But Pompeo slammed the international court's decision as null and void, and Iran's clinging to the decades overdue treaty, absurd, in announcing the termination. The ICJ rules on disputes between UN members, the UN member states, but its decisions are ultimately largely symbolic and non-binding as it has no way to enforce them. The United States has no higher chain of appeal now that the ICJ has finally ruled on the issue. So the United States can't run to anybody else to try to overturn this. But as we stated, they're just simply going to ignore it, like they do with so many other things. Now, in a directly related story, now this has to do with the oil and how the sanctions affect Americans as well, and our bottom line and our money in regard to what our gas costs. This is a great article coming from the Ron Paul Institute entitled "Trump to Saudi King, Pay Up for U.S. Military Protection," which as of course Dan McAdams rightly points out, is kind of unpatriotic and offensive to simply say that the military and these service members are just a bunch of mercenaries. Just, we're going to send in our people or we're going to pull away their protection if you don't pay up. Point blank. You know, as Ron Paul points out correctly, they've usually kind of guised this under the idea of some kind of national security interest. But Trump just point blank says, you better pay up or you're not going to get our protection anymore. Making it very clear that they're the bully kind of gangster mentality that we've seen them as. It's very interesting. Now, the paragraph before the video, which I recommend you watch, says, frustrated by the Saudi refusal to increase oil production by 2 million barrels a day, President Trump said at a rally yesterday that absent U.S. military protection, the Saudi government would not last 2 weeks, which I kind of agree with. But that being said, he said the Saudis should, quote, pay up if they want to remain in charge. Now, understanding how this all works out, the reason they're having these issues with oil and as he points out rightly in the video, the idea behind this is that Trump is trying to push forward this idea of economic growth and jobs and success and prosperity, but now we're all of a sudden having issues where we're paying a lot more for gas than Americans want to, which in Americans' eyes, that's kind of a big deal. You know, it's you know, whatever affects our bottom line. And the point being that now he's trying to find ways to balance that. And of course, just turns to Saudi Arabia and says, produce more oil. And apparently, they recently just said no. To sum up a long chain of events, they basically just said, no, we don't want to do that. And so now he's essentially threatening them on the world stage and saying, either you produce 2 million barrels more of oil so I don't look bad while I'm threatening other countries such as Venezuela and Iran, where a lot of this oil could potentially come from if they weren't doing this, then we're going to pull our military support, showing you the mercenaries that they're making themselves out to be. Now, as they point out, they asked the question, you know, while oil prices going up, which we talked about, who's to blame? And they say the best answer comes from a surprising source. And they point out that, in fact, President Putin spoke up. He says, quote, President Trump has said he thinks the oil price is too high. Well, probably to some extent he's right, but we are absolutely okay with it at $65, $75 a barrel to ensure the efficient operation of oil companies and ensure investment. But let's be frank. Such oil prices are to some extent the result of the U.S. administration. I'm talking about sanctions against Iran, about political problems in Venezuela, and just look at what's happening in Libya. Very interesting to see President Putin speak up about something like this and being spot on in my eyes. And it's important to recognize the reality here that as Trump is threatening Saudi Arabia with their support unless they produce more oil so he doesn't look bad, realize that all of this, everything we're talking about, is due and created by U.S. sanctions around the world, in particular Iran, as they threaten everybody from doing deals with them. It's a very interesting chain of events to see how it all leads back to the United States and their foreign policy. For the final story of the day, this one, I wouldn't call it important, but it is important to cover for the reasons that Kerry Wedler lays out. Now, there's a lot of conspiracy flying around about this entire story, and maybe rightly so. This one entitled "The Presidential Alert Text is Everything You Need to Know About the U.S. Government." All the conspiracies aside, which may in fact be true, people talking about the idea that this somehow was used, you know, had all of a sudden had access to your information, which I would argue they already do. So it's one of those things that's kind of like, it could be true, but likely more so that this is more about control and the ability to access everybody in an instant, which some people say is a good thing. But the points that Kerry lays out are very, very important to understand in regard to government in general. Now, of course, she says, number one, no one has ever asked if you wanted it. Because apparently because of a law passed in 2006, the government can assert the president's right to text you even if you turn off other government notifications. Similarly, the increasingly omnipotent government at large never asks if you'd like to participate. Though politicians and their supporters can claim we are the government, all they want, we were never given a chance to... I was reading her quote. Though politicians and their supporters claim that we are the government, they can do it all they want. We were never given a chance to actually voluntarily agree. And that's an excellent point she makes. Because regardless of how they try to make it seem like we are an integral part in all of this, we're never given a choice of whether we even want to participate. Taxes at the barrel of a gun is not freedom. Now she says, number two, if you don't have a choice over these impositions on your property, or that you don't have a choice in general about the property aspect. And that I found to be very interesting because I hadn't considered that. Like, this is your cell phone. You bought this cell phone. And yet they have a way to access it and put things on it without you having any say in that, which I did actually find kind of profound that I hadn't thought about. And she says, even though we own our phones and our data plans, there's no way to opt out of the presidential alert. Just as owning your own home does not preclude the government from taxing it and confiscating it if you refuse to pay, the government can also apparently invade your private home or your phone and your home, right? But I found that to be pretty interesting. Number three, she says you can't opt out. Now, you might be able to opt out of annoying cold calls from private companies, she says, but when it comes to government, you have no choice. You were never asked if you wanted to participate. You can't prevent the state from infringing on your private property, and you can't peacefully excuse yourself from this process. If you, for example, decided you didn't want your tax dollars to fund imperial wars that kill innocent people, well, too bad, she says. If you don't want to fund mass surveillance, tough luck. And if you refuse to pay, you'll be thrown in a cage. If you don't want to go through the TSA's body scanners, you can technically opt out, but only insofar as you're willing to have your private parts groped by a government agent. This is what defines government. Its ability to force you to submit without requiring your permission and without giving you an alternative. You can't even leave if you don't like it without paying a compulsory exorbitant fee. And that's an excellent point. Again, Kerry always has a way of kind of hitting it on the nail in these kind of hot button topics for people. And she says, number four, of course, it's for your own safety. Many are convinced the alerts are necessary in order to protect us. But as she points out in the beginning, it's not like we haven't already had these things before. These FEMA alerts and these things already existed. So the fact that this is so necessary for our protection seems kind of redundant. It's superfluous. Oh, at the end of the day, it's something that we've seen many times in the past. So I find it ominous, ultimately, that we're simply just reasserting the same thing, but it comes directly from the president. She goes on to say, but just as FEMA is certain these texts will help in emergency situations, the government at large insists it's there to protect you. The previously mentioned wars, mass surveillance, and state-sanctioned sexual assault are all in place to preserve public safety, of course, just like President Trump's text. Now, I really enjoyed that. I recommend you read the whole article for yourself. Kerry Wedler always does an excellent job with these things. But the reality of all of this stuff is that nothing is like it seems. Right? I mean, all of this stuff coming in front of us today, the Kavanaugh hearings and the FBI and all of this stuff. And I think even this text scenario in a large way keeps us from focusing on what's really going on around the world and at home. And really shows you the lack of actual freedom and rights that we have today, even though we think we do. It's kind of an illusory concept today that we think we have all these things, but when it really comes down to it, you don't. And there's a mechanism in place to make you feel like you have some kind of access to these things. But like I said, at the end of the day, when you really push the issue, they seem to just disappear right in front of you. And this kind of a thing is something that hopefully we can see through. But again, when it comes back to things like the U.S. allies around the world, the illegalization of plants, and when they make their own version of it, it seems to be completely okay. It needs to show you what's really important to these people. And I can promise you, if you continue paying attention, you can see that it's not you. Thank you again for joining me today. Unfortunately, there will not be a T-Lab R&R today, but I will make sure and do one tomorrow. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.